Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here this evening. We are going to go through Genesis chapter 34. Jacob has returned to the land. Last week we saw here's the Dead Sea, the Jordan River. Here's the Jabbok. We've got on that front page, you can see the places over there. You've got Mahanaim over here. You've got Peniel here and then Succoth right there. That's the Jabbok's not drawn correctly. They had the two camps here. This is where he had met the face of God, and they moved over here to a place called Succoth, it means dwellings, and then he crossed over after he'd gone across this side and met Esau. They crossed back over and crossed into the land over near Shechem. Now Shechem, as you can see on the map, and I've got some pictures on the back two pages just of Shechem. There's Mount Ebal on this side and Mount Gerizim on this side. When Joshua comes across, eventually they're going to go here and set up a stone or another pillar on Mount Ebal. Joshua's going to build an altar to Moses, and they're going to offer sacrifices when they come into the land. Eventually, Shechem's going to morph into the New Testament city called Samaria, the Samaritanites. On Mount Gerizim right here, that is where they're going to build the Samaritan temple. That's where the woman that meets Jesus at the well says, you know, we worship here, you worship there, which is right. And Jesus says, you do not know what you worship. I mean, you're worshiping something you don't know. But they had a temple on Mount Gerizim right here. Shechem is right down here in this area. Jacob, as we see, comes across. Again, as we entered the book or entered the chapter last week, Jacob's name was switched to Israel, where it means he struggles with God. And he then, the very last verse, it says he, verse 19 of chapter 33, let me go back and read verse 18. After Jacob came from Padan Aram, that's up in Aram or Syria, he came back and left Laban. He arrived safely at the city of Shechem in Canaan. Now, what's going to live there tonight, we're going to see it's the Hivites live there. Now, they're just generally called Canaanites, but there's several different nations living within the land, the Perizzites, the Philistines eventually. There are Canaanites there, but these are called Hivites. He arrived safely in the city of Shechem in Canaan and camped within the site of the city. So Jacob is in within this area right here. Now, you can see, like I said, a couple of pictures. On the very back page, there's a picture of the wall of Shechem. That's from around 1500, 1000 BC. So that's a few years after, but that's the same location. And then on page 5, you can see the temple fortress, and that's referred to in the book of Judges, and a pillar that is stood up right there. That could be Joshua's pillar that he stood up between the two mountains, and that's where Israel on Mount Ebal is going to read the blessings of the law. On Mount Gerizim, they're going to read the curse of law. And they have found a little tiny piece of jewelry with the curses or the name of Yahweh on it in this very location, which means the Jews were here doing exactly what the Bible says at this location. And then eventually, like in the book of Judges, it refers to this temple fortress that is built right there. And you can see as you look into the back, as you're looking at that picture, you're looking with the Jordan River at your back. You're looking this way. You're looking between the mountains, looking towards what's going to be Samaria and then towards the Mediterranean Sea. So there'd be a going between these mountains, Ebal and Gerizim, there's a trail that you can travel through. Somewhere in this area, Jacob is going to then settle. And it says, going back to the chapter 33, verse 19, for 100 pieces of silver he bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, the plot of ground where he pitched his tent. And so we're going to meet Hamor tonight. And Hamor is like a chieftain. The word that he's described as the leader is the same word that is used to refer to Ishmael having gone down into his land, and there was leaders in the tribe of Ishmael that grew and developed. Well, now Hamor is the leader of the Hivites in Shechem at this time, and Jacob purchases a plot of land. He buys land. It appears he'll eventually give this to Joseph on his deathbed. And interesting, the very last line or verse, verse 20 of chapter 33, there he set up an altar and called it El Ela Israel, or the God, El, the God of Israel, or that's his name, the one who struggles with God. This is the God of me, you know, my name is now Israel. And so there he calls on it, and it's now no longer, it's very important in the sense that it's no longer the God of Abraham or the God of Isaac. He now sets up an altar in Shechem, somewhere in this picture on page 5, probably in that area somewhere. He sets up an altar and calls it the God of Israel. So you've got the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and now it's the God of Jacob, but his name's been switched to Israel. So again, when it says Israel, that's his personal name. I don't know if you should consider that Israel, the nation and all the tribes, as much as that's Jacob's name is now Israel, and then the nation's going to be called Israel after Jacob. Okay, so he's settled in there, and they've got herds. Remember, all the possessions. He sent many possessions up to Esau, flocks and herds and gifts, and they're riding on camels. All of his sons are on camels. So Jacob comes across here. You've got not, you don't just have a sojourner coming across with a backpack and a, you know, some food for lunch. He's coming across with an entire economy, an entire city, an entire people is moving into the land, and he buys a plot of land, and then they're going to be using the fields. So his sons are going to be shepherds. Throughout the book of Genesis now, the sons are going to be shepherds. And as this story begins, the sons are out away from camp, away from the land that Jacob has purchased or Israel has purchased, and they're watching the sheep. And this is, again, one of those interesting stories. There, you know, we got thousands of years being covered in the book of Genesis, and so there's got to be thousands and thousands of stories they could be telling. But for some reason, chapter 34 of the 50 chapters in Genesis, one of them is dedicated to this account. And I'm going to read it, we're going to look at it, put it in perspective, learn from it. But sometimes it's hard, like, what is this? The best you've got for historical accounts? Is there something better you can give us? And I'm not being blasphemous or mocking, but it's like, we at the end of every story, we've got questions. Can we get more details? It's like, nope, that's enough. But hey, let's tell you a story about, well, here it is. Now Dinah, this is Dinah. Her name's only been mentioned once, and that's when she was born. She's not mentioned when all of Jacob's 11 sons go across the Jabbok. He takes them across the Jabbok, and then he returns to Peniel and wrestles with the Lord. He goes across here and then comes back. He talks about his 11 sons, but doesn't say his 11 sons and Dinah. Dinah's just not mentioned. But all of a sudden, here she's mentioned. And she's mentioned, now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, or the daughter Leah had born to Jacob. So the reason Leah is mentioned, most likely, because it's a true statement, Dinah's the daughter of Leah, one of Jacob's four wives, but also born to Leah are going to be two boys, Levi and Simeon, are going to be two of Leah's, Leah's sons. So that, you know, they've all the others are going to be half brothers, half sister, but these are Dinah, Levi, and Simeon. Are all their brothers and sisters. They got the same mom, the same dad. Now, it goes on and says, I'm reading in my NIV. I'm going to switch to the notes that you've got there also, and that's in the English Standard Version. And then I'll just read into the notes here. Page 1. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to see the women of the land. Now, what this means is she goes out to see and interact with the Hivites. We could call them Canaanites or the people of the land. She goes off to, to talk to them, to do business, to trade, to get to know them. So she's interacting with them. And again, you can see Rachel and Rebecca were both shepherdess. They brought flocks, so they're out moving about. And so Dinah's got some freedom. And she goes out to see the women of the land. That's all we know. It's like, you know, as people then start to speculate, you know, is she going off to have coffee? Is she going to do business? Is she going to, you know, go shopping? You know, some commentators throughout the ages, Jewish commentators, you know, she was a prostitute. Which, I mean, there's no sense for that. But it's, I mean, that's like, what is she doing amongst the women of the land? One, she's not just confined to Jacob's tent or Jacob's camp. She goes out around Shechem, and there's business, there's houses, there's people, and she's meeting the ladies of the land. It goes out, she goes to see the women of the land. It shows she's got freedom. It shows she's interested in their culture. It shows she's coming from a family of brothers. She's looking maybe for some ladies to, you know, go shopping with. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her. Now, she goes off to see the women. While she's seeing the women of the land, the chief's son, Hamor, whose name, by the way, I'll probably say it later, but I don't want to forget, his name means donkey. His name means donkey. And that would have been very comical for the Israelites as they told the story, read the story, that Hamor, donkey man, donkey's son, which is Shechem. And Shechem is, again, now we've got the name of the city is Shechem, but the name of the chief's son is Shechem. So this would be Prince Shechem, if you would. So Dinah goes off to see the ladies of the land, the Hivites. It doesn't say if that's good or bad. She just goes off to see him. But while she's seeing the ladies, the prince, Shechem, sees her. And there's four verbs. You can see them on page one at the bottom. There's four verbs that are put together. I'll just read them. And saw, and then, and he took, and he lay, and he violated her. So there's four things. He sees her, he takes her, he lays with her, and he violates her. Those are four verbs. Sometimes people try to break them into three verbs, the laying and violating as one act, and it's, you know, it's one act. But there's four verbs there in the Hebrew. It strings together. One leads to another. Some things about this, I'll finish reading the context here. Verse 2, and when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her, he seized her and lay with her and humiliated her. And his soul was drawn to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the young woman and spoke tenderly to her. Now, as you're looking at verse 3, it doesn't make this explicit, and you don't have to accept this, but the commentators refer to it this way. Dennis Prager, he says it this way, is when it says he saw her and he took her, he doesn't just, you know, rape her and send her away. He takes her. She is in his house. She is taken, in a sense, captive. And so this whole story, she doesn't come home and say, Dad, you won't believe what happened. She's away. And word has to trickle out somehow. But she is now taken captive. And so when it says right there in verse 3, and his soul was drawn to Dinah. If you look down, I think it's on the next page. Yeah, point 10 on the next page. That word drawn is a word you know. You're familiar with it, at least. It is the word D-A-B-A-Q in the Hebrew. And when we translate it, dabak, it means drawn to her. It means to cling, to cleave, to adhere, to stick. It's the same word used in Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, that a man shall leave his woman and be dabak, drawn or cling to his wife. So it's like a marriage word, but without the ceremony, without the ritual, without the proper sequence of going and asking the father and getting permission and paying a bride's price. It's he sees her, he takes her, and after he has laid with her and humiliated her, he now is drawn to her. He now is clinging to her. Again, what does that mean? It says he was drawn to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and then it says he loved the young woman and spoke tenderly. So it seems to be positive. There's several things you can go with here, is the idea that he lay with her, he violated her, he's cruel. and that you could go with that. I mean, he does something immoral. Even in his own culture, he doesn't follow any kind of marriage procedure. They're going to try to play catch up. He's going to send his father and go down to Jacob and try to make negotiations after the fact. But on the positive side, if you want to say it positive, he wants to cling to her. He's drawn to her like a husband should be to his wife, cling to her. And then the word is loved the young woman or maiden. And then he's speaking tenderly to her. And the reason he's clinging to her and he's loving her and speaking tenderly is he's captured her. She's in his house. She's in his, you know, palace. He's in his apartment, whatever. He has her, and she's not free to come and go. So he's taken her. So Sechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, "Get me this girl for my wife." And so now Sechem is going to now begin the process. I've taken her. I've got her here. I've slept with her. We need to get permission. Go ask her father if I can keep her. And so now it's like, wait, we've got the horse before the cart, or the cart before the horse, or this is not, something's wrong, obviously. And so you've got some things written down there. I think I've said everything. I do have that map there you should look at. That I've got it drawn on the board. I think it's all detailed. But that map is going to be useful in the coming weeks, chapter 34 and 35. After today's account, Jacob's going to move down to Bethel, where he met God, and he's going to make an altar to God there again, and then he's going to move on through Jerusalem and end up back down in Hebron. So that map kind of covers quite a few things that are going to be taking place, and of course you've got my artwork there that kind of helps explain it and bring it to light there with my little hand-drawn, penciled-in altars and trees that I drew in 1987. I think we've got everything there. I've went on page 2 now. Point 6, the wording and use of the verbs is similar to the sons of God and the daughters of men, where they see and they took. The same thing, they saw the daughters of men and they took the ones they wanted. And that's what Sechem does. He sees Dinah and takes her. So it's repeating that. And also, again, it is repeated in the Garden of Eden with Eve. She sees the fruit and she takes the fruit. So this is if you want to make a connection there, Eve sees and takes, the sons of God see and take, and now Sechem sees and takes. But the issue, I think, now is he's going to try to get, you know, this Abraham's servant went up and negotiated for Rebekah. Jacob goes up and negotiates for his wife, Rachel, and he ends up with 4. Sechem has not done that. He's just saw and taken. But now we got to do the back work. We got to do the proper procedures. Okay, Genesis chapter 34, verse 5 through 7. Now Jacob heard that he had defiled his daughter Dinah. We do not know how. Commentators would say, it's not given. Somehow, again, if she goes crying home, it's like, "Dad, you won't believe what happened to me." Okay, but that's not what appears. She seems to be confined. We don't see Dinah come out and interact again. She's kept away. And so somehow, you know, probably, where's Dinah? You know, why didn't she come home tonight or today? And then the word trickles out that, oh, we hear in town that she's with the prince. The prince has taken her into his house. I mean, it doesn't say that. I'm just saying, how does Jacob in the camp outside of the town here? Well, first of all, his daughter doesn't come home. And then second of all, people start asking questions. Now remember, this is not just Jacob, 4 wives, 11 sons, and Dinah. You've got all of his servants. You've got all the people and women and the flocks and the sons. They're going to start having children. There's a lot of people coming and going in Jacob's camp. I mean, he's a little moving city. Okay, now Jacob had heard that he, Sechem, had defiled his daughter Dinah, but his sons were with his livestock in the field, so Jacob held his peace until they came. Very interesting. Jacob says nothing. He doesn't send messengers out to the camp. Sons, you got to find out. You got to come home. I mean, why? He just keeps his peace. He's just like, well, He doesn't know what to do. He's afraid to take action. He's a new man following God. He doesn't fly into action. Maybe he doesn't tell his sons because he knows they'll leave the flocks and he wants to make sure the flocks are taken care of. Don't ruin this year's economy. You know, we got the paychecks got to come in. Take care of the flocks. We'll take care of Dinah later. I don't know. But he doesn't send out, you know, send me a couple boys. Let's go take care of this. He doesn't send a messenger in to find out. Doesn't check on her. I mean, these are all things that are left out of the story. But it does say, but his sons were in with his livestock in the field, so Jacob held his peace until they came. He let them finish their work, and then when they come, they came back in. They probably heard from Jacob then what had taken place. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, donkey, the father of Shechem. Now, there's several things going on here. I don't want to drag this out and keep adding obvious facts to it. But Hamor has a situation. He is the chief of these people, and it's a prosperous, well-to-do people, powerful at some level. But he's got Jacob that he has sold land to, living here with his flocks, and Jacob himself is wealthy, and Jacob himself is powerful. Just seeing the camels come in, the flocks come in, and the sons, it's like this is someone. So Hamor doesn't just come over and say, hey, here's what we're going to do. He has enough respect for Jacob, possibly out of fear, possibly. It doesn't say it explicitly, but by the end of the story, you can realize there was something to be feared of. But also, he maybe wants to negotiate. He maybe wants to cash in on this relationship. He just, it's a great opportunity. Okay, and Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. Now we're going to start talking marriage. He's going to be asking for Dinah in marriage. But Hamor is not going to say anything about the apology. This is one thing that's not mentioned here by Shechem or Hamor is like a confession that we were wrong, an apology. We need to make this right. They acted as if nothing happened. If it's part of the story, if it's an important part, it's just a fact. They start negotiating like, hey, he wants to marry your daughter, and here's how we can negotiate this. It's like, wait a minute, he's already taken her. She's in the city, in his palace, in his apartment. He's already slept with her. He's already humiliated her. That's not brought up. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. The sons of Jacob had come in from the field as soon as they heard of it, and the men were indignant and very angry because he had done an outrageous thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, for such a thing must not be done. So that's establishing very clearly this is morally wrong. Now, we're going to have some situations amongst these boys. We know as the story goes that Joseph is going to be very sexually pure, but we also know there's going to be Reuben and a couple others that are going to have some major problems with their sexual behavior. So they themselves are not living a pure life as we would want to see. But they do know this is bad, and this should not be done. But Hamor, verse 8, spoke with them saying, the soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him to be his wife. Make marriages with us. So he says in this negotiation, he's saying my son wants to marry Dinah. So he says now Shechem wants to be with Dinah. How do we make this marriage take place? And we're going to have to play a bribe price. We're going to have to convince you that this is a benefit. You're going to see Jacob and the brothers deceiving Hamor and Shechem. Then you're going to see Hamor and Shechem go to the men of the city and deceive them. No one's telling the full story. Everybody's kind of, it seems to be focused on financial gain. It has to have an advantage. All right, here we go. But Hamor spoke with them, saying, the soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. So he's in love. He wants your daughter. it should have been, we're sorry, we've made a mistake, but just starts off as if nothing's happened. Let's just forget about what has happened. Please give her to him to be his wife. Make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us and take our daughters for yourself. Now, again, we don't know of Jacob having any other daughters. I mean, where are all these daughters of Jacob coming? Are they granddaughters? Are they people of the community? But Hamar's willing to say, and you can take our daughters. He wants to intermarry. Now, as you know, and it, you know, Hamar's unaware of this, but Abraham was very stringent. We cannot marry the people of this land. Isaac was very direct. We can't let Jacob marry the people of this land. And now, to keep, because they're going to come in and destroy these descendants in four generations, after four generations in Egypt. Well, now the intermarriage has begun, which means any children born in this relationship are now potentially going to be destroyed by the very people that they've intermarried with. And then he goes on and says, Hamar goes on and says, besides the marriages, you shall dwell with us, and the land shall be open to you. Dwell and trade in it and get property in it. In other words, you bought land, but we'll just welcome you into our community, and you can live among us as a Hivite. Sechem also said to her father, Jacob, and to her brothers, let me find favor in your eyes. And this is the prince talking now. So that was the father talking. Let's get together. Let's intermarry. Your people become my people. My people become your people. You can trade, buy land. Just be one of us. You're welcome to come with us. Then Sechem now realizes we need a bride price. Sechem also said to her father, Jacob, and to her brothers, let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me, I will give. Whatever you want for a bride price, I will go get it. Ask me for as great a bride price and gift as you will, and I will give whatever you say to me. Only give me the young woman to be my wife. Now he's already got her. She's back home in his apartment or wherever. But he says, I'll pay it. So he basically gives them a blank check. Now this sounds, you know, aggressive. It sounds honorable. But how is he going to come up with money? Possibly through he maybe has great resources, but he also is the prince, and they could enforce taxation on the people. Where are they going to get the money? But he gives them a blank check. The father, Hamor, wants to have interaction, move in with us. Sechem wants to pay a bride price. What else we got written down there? Okay, Genesis chapter 34, verse 13. The sons of Jacob answered Sechem. So there's our two offers. Now the sons of Jacob are going to answer. Sechem, the prince, and his father, the chief, deceitfully. Okay, so they're not going to be honest. Well, what do you expect from Jacob, other than his sons, to be just like him? Because he had defiled their sister Dinah. They still want an apology. They still want payment for what you have done. We'll talk like we're going to intermarry with you, but we're setting you up to pay you back for what you have done. They said to them, we cannot do this thing. We cannot do this, to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised. Now that's a derogatory term. It's like, no, you're uncircumcised. Now they've got a plan. In their world, circumcision is entrance into the Abrahamic covenant. It's a sign of the Abrahamic covenant. Now they may, you know, as it goes on, there's probably people that were circumcised that didn't understand it. Just like people go to church and they take communion and they don't understand what's going on. There's probably many people in Israel's history get circumcised and it never, just what we do. I don't understand. We just go to church on Christmas and Easter. They just got circumcised. But it actually has a symbolic meaning for the Abrahamic covenant. Now, they're going to have the Hivites of Sechem get circumcised. Now, they're not saying, first of all, if you're going to marry our wives or marry our daughters, our sister, you're going to have to become a follower of Yahweh. We'd like to share the gospel with you. We'd like to tell you about our God, that Father Jacob just met him, and what an experience. We've got some stories to tell you about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the God of Israel. That's not the case right here. They're not using it for conversion. There's not a covenant that they're making, you know, as far as, okay, we will live and become your people. You're going to have to join us in a covenant with circumcision. They're using circumcision as a self-inflicted wound on the people of Sachem. And you'll see this. They're being deceitful. They have no integrity or meaning in the circumcision. And they're making it up. They say, we cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a disgrace to us. Only on this condition will we agree with you, that we'll become people with you, we'll enter trade with you, we'll live with you, and we'll accept your bride price for our sister. Only that you will become as we are by every male among you being circumcised. Now that every male among you, that is written in the sense, every male that is able to go out and in, or go in and out of the gate, meaning every able-bodied male that's able to come out of the gate to go to the flocks, to go on business trips, to go to war, everyone able to function in society, they must be circumcised. Not just Sechem. I mean, that would be legitimate. Sechem's got to be circumcised. But no, every able-bodied man that's able to go in and out of the gate, we need them to be circumcised. Okay, now, it's not a big deal, except now they're asking Hamor and Sechem. Both Hamor and Sechem would be like, easily done. Let's go out back and take care of it right now. No, we need you to go tell every able-bodied man in your camp to do this thing. So now you're going to have to convince your people to do this. And that's not going to be an easy sell, so they're going to have to exaggerate. Only on this condition will we agree that you will become as we are by every male among you being circumcised. Then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to ourselves, and we will dwell with you and become one people. Then will the Hivites and the Israelites will just intermarry, and we'll just become one people here. And we'll trade with you. You can have our possessions. But if you will not listen to us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and we will be gone. Now at the end of the day, that's really what Hamor and Sechem would wish, is just here's Dinah, and that's what they're going to do. They're going to move from Sechem, they're going to move down to Bethel. They're heading down here next. And so point one there, I got on my notes, but on page two, they know Dinah's not a free, Dinah's not there in the kitchen listening to them negotiate. She's back at Sechem's house. Interestingly for myself, and I did it for you, this is two pictures there just of the topography. The top picture, we're standing in the land of Jordan looking west across the Jordan River. This would have been the view when they were over here at Mahanaim and at Peniel crossing to Jabbok. If they would have looked this way, this is what they would have seen. And what you can see right there is they are at Sechem between Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. That's where they're at right now. And they're going to be moving next week down to Bethel and on down to Hebron. So that's kind of the topography, looking west towards the Mediterranean Sea over the Jordan. Flip it around. Now in the next picture, you're on the Mediterranean Sea, looking over the coast, up into the Shephelah, the hill country, up over the mountains, and you can't see the Jordan. Now do notice, if you're interested, on that first picture, you see the dotted line? That's sea level. And notice where Jericho sits. It sits below sea level, which means the Jordan, the Sea of Galilee is below sea level, the whole Jordan River is below sea level, and then the Dead Sea, of course, is below sea level, and nothing flows. That's the lowest place. Nothing flows out of that. It just stops there. There's nowhere for it to flow. It just evaporates, leaving behind all the minerals. Thus, it's called the Salt Sea, which makes it the Dead Sea. Jericho is the lowest city on earth. Now, the other view, you're looking from the Mediterranean Sea in, and once again, you can see Sechem in between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. And on Mount Ebal's, where Moses Joshua is going to build an altar when he comes across. In between there, he's going to, that pillar that I showed you, that picture of, is standing between there. Then they're going to move down to Bethel, and that's in Bethel is where Jacob saw the ladder or the stairway. Saw the angels ascending and descending from Bethel. He's going to go back there again and build an altar, and God is going to speak with him again at Bethel. And then you can see Jerusalem and on down to Hebron. Okay, I just wanted you to kind of get a perspective on where these stories are taking place. Page 3. After the boys say, well, you're all going to have every able-bodied man in Shechem get circumcised. Verse 18, chapter 34. Their words pleased Hamor and Hamor's son, Shechem. It pleased the donkey and the donkey's son, Shechem. So, great. We'll have all the men in our city get circumcised so we can do business with you and we can become one people. So they definitely see an advantage of becoming one people with Jacob. Again, that's an amazing thing. Jacob's one man who went away, comes back in 20 years, and you've got little nation tribes wanting to join with him. And the young men did not delay to do the thing because he delighted in Jacob's daughter. So Shechem's going to go in, start a campaign, the circumcision campaign. Now he was the most honored of all of his father's house, this prince. So he's probably got other brothers and stuff. So Hamor and his son Shechem came to the gate, and that's important. In our other stories, we talk about the gates of the city. And I don't know if we got some here. Well, here's Shechem right here, looking at that. Here's the gate of Beersheba. Here's the gate of Dan, the city of Canaanite city of Dan. And I know we've talked about the different gates, but that's where we're going to have a public meeting. They're all going to come in, and there's chambers there. So there's like consuls meetings there. So they go to the city gate. So Hamor and his son Shechem came to the gate of their city and spoke to the men of their city, saying, "Now here's what they're going to say. See if this sounds like the agreement that what they offered Jacob and what Jacob offered them." They say, verse 21. "These men are at peace with us. Let them dwell in the land and trade in it." Meaning we're not going to chase them out. They can stay right here. "For behold, the land is large enough for them." We've got plenty of room here. We have open border policy. They can come in here. These people are not going to cause any trouble. "Let us take their daughters as wives." And that's the whole issue. We want Dinah. "And let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the men agree to dwell with us and become one people." They'll only stay here and dwell with us. Now, why would you want them to dwell with you? It has to be they're going to bring some kind of influx into the economy. There's going to be an advantage. Their flocks, their trade. "Only on one condition will the men agree to dwell with us and become one people. Only when every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised." Now again, there's no mention of Yahweh. There's no mention of the Abrahamic covenant. There's no mention of any covenant. It's just it's something they want us to get this mark. Now, and then watch this. Now verse 23, watch how this gets sold. "Will not their livestock, their property, and all their beasts be ours?" You can look over the wall and you can see all that's out there. If we'll get circumcised, that is ours. "Only let us agree with them and they will dwell with us." What a boost in the economy. "And all who went out of the gate of his city listened to Hamor and his son, and every male was circumcised." That had to be you talk about the big beautiful bill. This is the big beautiful bill. All that stuff, all we've got to do is vote yes by circumcision, and the big beautiful bill passes, and you're going to see this take off and this take off. And they're like, and all the men like, I mean, isn't this crazy? That they all like, what a great idea. So Jacob's sons are deceiving Hamor and Shechem. Hamor and Shechem buy into it and then build on that and say all of that stuff will become our stuff. And now they've deceived every male in their community. And every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of the city. And what that means is all who could go out. I mean, all who could go out and work, go out and watch the flocks, go out in battle, go out in business. And then point 4, that's what I'm saying right there. Jacob's sons are deceiving Hamor and Shechem. Hamor and Shechem are deceiving the Hivites. Genesis chapter 34, verse 25 through 29. "Now, on the third day when they were sore..." And this is from, again, the study that I've done. The third day is the source day of the, it's a surgery. It's a surgery in 2000. It's a surgery done in 1900 BC. They're doing surgery. And on the third day, the reaction, the fever would be the highest. So they're running, all the men are running a fever, infection, all that's taking place. And they're the source. They are all the able-bodied men that can go in and out of the gate, can't go in and out of the gate today. And so the boys knew what was going on. They 3 days they waited. On the third day, when they were sore, two of the sons of Jacob. Now, I'm going to read this and tell the story the way it is written. Because you say, the sons of Jacob, they're going to name Levi and Simeon. Dinah's two brothers, Leah's two sons. They're going to go in and attack the city. You think, well, they probably brought their brothers with them. The Bible doesn't say that. They probably brought some servants with them. The Bible doesn't say that. They're not fighting an entire city. They're fighting a bunch of men that are in pain, that are not ready for battle, that are not able. They're running a fever. They're weak. And they're surprised. So let's leave it like it is. Two of the sons of Jacob, Simon and Levi, or Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took their swords and came against the city while it felt secure and killed all the males. So how did they do? They didn't rush it necessarily like a military storming the walls. They came in. Hey, welcome to our new policy, our new big beautiful bill. Glad to be here. And they slowly started killing people. Doesn't say that. They quickly started moving from house to house. And pretty soon people realized something's going on. It doesn't tell you how they did it. They didn't need to come in with a war attitude, you know, the war cry. They could have just came in and just casually walked door to door. It doesn't say how they did it, except that they did it. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain. Okay, they killed Hamor and his son Sechem with the sword and took Dinah out of Sechem's house. So that's where she's been this whole time. And went away. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered. Now it says the sons of Jacob. Does that mean all of the sons came in after Levi and Simeon? Or is that just referring to Levi and Simeon? They came upon the slain and plundered the city because they had defiled their sister. They took the flocks and their herds, their donkeys, and whatever was in the city and in the field, all their wealth, all their little ones, and their wives, and all that was in the houses, they captured and plundered. So they did not just kill the men. All the money that the Sechem thought they were going to get from Jacob and his family and his tribe, Levi and Simeon went in, killed the men, and they take everything. They took everything in the city. They plundered the house. They went house to house. They took the flocks. Not only that, but they kidnapped. It says they kidnapped the women and the children. Now, what did they do with these people? Did they sell them into slavery? Would they be willing to sell these people into slavery? They're going to sell Joseph here in a few chapters to the traveling Midianites. Where did these people go? They took them. Did they sell them for profit? It doesn't say. But what they did, I've got right here, point two, Simeon and Levi may have thought there was no way their sister would be released. I mean, now we're going to try to justify it. Why did they do this? They thought there's no way Sechem's going to let his sister go, so we got to kill these people. So we're going to go in and rescue our sister and kill a few guys and rescue her. But if we kill a few guys and rescue our sister, well, now we've left some people that will now retaliate. Now they're going to invade us, and we're going to have this ongoing war. It would be best if we just eliminated, and by killing everybody, they are going to end the situation. There's going to be no retaliation. They're going to strike once, strike fierce, and there's no follow-up battle. Dinah's rescued. Everyone's dead. Situation is over. I mean, it's not a bad strategy if you're trying to end the war. Simeon and Levi may have seen this as a rescue mission. Leaving the Shechemites alive would have set up a counterattack, point five. But Simeon and Levi say it was all about Dinah's honor, but their behavior led to a defilement of the entire family's honor. So they're saying Dinah's honor was ruined, so we're going to kill this entire city, steal their crops, take captive their women and children, probably sell them to slavery, and plunder their houses because of Dinah's honor. Now, Jacob's going to say, and we're going to read it, it's like, he doesn't say it this way, but he could have said, you've saved Dinah's or restored Dinah's honor, but what about our family honor? I mean, you just slaughtered an entire city, you lied to them and then slaughtered them, and we're surrounded by, this is not just everybody in the land of Israel, the land of Canaan, you've got other tribes and peoples around, and they're going to see this, and now we're going to be hunted the rest of our lives. It's like, why did you do this? So they've destroyed the family honor by trying to restore Dinah's honor. So again, there is some thought put into it, but point six, whatever the reason for justification of slaughtering all the men, there does not seem to be any justification for kidnapping the women and children and plundering their houses. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, here's Jacob's response. Again, remember, Jacob, when he first heard it, just kept his peace. Why? Is he waiting for the sons to take care of it? Is he just not want any more conflict? I mean, I've finished my conflict with Laban. I'm at peace with God. He's enjoyed, 4 days of peace with God? And he's just like, let's not, why did he have peace? But now, Jacob then says to Simeon and Levi, again, just these two guys, you have brought trouble on me by making me stink to the inhabitants of the land. Everybody wanted to trade with me. Everybody welcomed me in the land. They were glad to see me come. Now I stink. In the land, the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites and the Perizzites. So he names two nations there. My numbers are few, meaning compared to these other cities. And if they gather themselves against me and attack me, I shall be destroyed, both I and my household. Now I'm in danger. Well, I was afraid of Esau. I wrestled with God. Now I'm here. I bought some land, fair price. We're living at peace. And now I've got Laban's the least of my worries. Esau's the least of my worries. I've got nations now going to be coming after me. My numbers are few, and if they gather themselves against me and attack me, I will be destroyed, both I and my household. But they said, should we treat our sister like a prostitute? Meaning, should our sister have been taken like that and forced? And they've justified their actions. Now, interesting here as we wrap this up, Jacob, he's upset that they put his head on the chopping block, or they put a target on his head. It's not until you get down to Genesis 49, verses 5 through 7, and if you flip, I'm going to flip in my NIV, my Bible here very quickly. This is now, Joseph's gone to Egypt, he's saved the land, the brothers have come and they've bought bread, you know, those couple of times, and Jacob has finally come down to the land and he's lived his final years in the land, he's met Pharaoh, and now he's on his deathbed. Genesis 49, verse 1. Then Jacob called for his sons and said, gather around so I can tell you what will happen to you in the days to come. So he's on his deathbed, and he's now going to prophesy about the future. And assembly goes on and says, and then he talks about Reuben in verse 3, verse 5. He begins talking about Simeon and Levi. And he's going to put those two together. Now what's going to happen to Simeon and Levi is this right here. As he prophesies about the future, Simeon and Levi are going to get no land. They're going to have no place in the land of Israel. They have no allotment. They're going to lose. Simeon and Levi are going to lose out. Now, if you ask, well, what about the 12 tribes? I thought there's 12 tribes of Israel. Simeon is going to end up moving into with the tribe of Judah. So that's going to leave one gap. Levi is going to get no land. And so that's going to leave a second gap. What takes place is Joseph is going to be a tribe, but then Joseph's two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, are going to become, Joseph's going to get, in a sense, Joseph is Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, because Joseph gets the double portion, and Ephraim and Manasseh are going to get the land. Simeon's going to go with Judah. Levi's going to get no land. They're going to become, they're going to be in charge of the tabernacle. And we'll talk about that next, how this happens. But Simeon receives no land and Levi receives no land. Levi redeems themselves as a tribe at the golden calf. But here's what Jacob says in chapter 49 as he goes through, and we'll eventually go through all those verses, but right now tonight, just to see what he says, chapter 49, verse 5 through 7, it says, and this is where he's rebuking them for their what they did at Shechem many years later. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Weapons of violence are their swords. Let my soul come not into their counsel. Meaning, I wished I had not let them counsel me when I was talking to Hamor and Shechem. Oh, my glory, be not joined to their company. For in their anger they killed men, and in their willfulness they hamstrung oxen. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Right there saying, they'll be divided and not have any land. They'll be scattered. And Simeon was scattered in Judah. Levi's going to be scattered throughout all the tribes. They're going to have portions in all the tribes. But that is what he's going to say. Now, A and B, that's A says what happens to Simeon. Levi does receive an allotment of land, but it's because, and I think I've got that on the next page, you know the story, Moses goes up on the mountain for 40 days, receives the law of Moses, and God tells him, when you go down, you've got a problem at the base of the mountain because you've been gone for 40 days. They've made a golden calf and they're worshiping. They're having a crazy party, dancing, singing, acting like Canaanites or Egyptians, whatever, at that golden calf. It's out of control. It is basically a riot. It's a worship service that's turned into pagan worship, that's turned into a riot. And Moses stood at the gate of the camp, comes down off the mountain after 40 days. I'm on page 5 in Exodus 32, verses 26 through 29. Now watch this. Moses stood in the gate of the camp and said, who is on the Lord's side? And he's shouting over the party. He says, who's on the Lord's side? Come to me. And guess who came to him? All the sons of Levi gathered around him. Not Reuben, not Judah, not Ephraim, Manasseh, not Issachar, not Zebulun, but the sons of Levi gathered around Moses when he came down the mountain. And then he said to them, thus says the Lord God of Israel. Here's what God says to you. Put your sword on your side, each of you. In other words, arm yourself for battle. This would be kind of, if you want to put this in contemporary terms, it's happening in Washington, D.C. right now. Put your sword on your side, each of you, and go to and fro from gate to gate throughout the camp, and each of you kill his brother and his companion and his neighbor. Just start killing those who are having this crazy orgy party with this golden calf. And just start gain control by just killing people. And Levi goes, that's what we do. That's who we are. And again, I'm not justifying violence. I'm reading you the Bible story. Go throughout the camp, each of you kill his brother and his companion and his neighbor. And the sons of Levi did according to the word of Moses. And that day about 3,000 men of the people fell. And Moses said, today you have been ordained for the service of the Lord, each one at the cost of his son and his brother, so that he might bestow a blessing upon you this day. And what ends up happening is, this tribe of Levi, they do not get, because of Simeon and Levi's behavior at Shechem, no land for you, no land for you. Simeon ends up just moving in with Judah, just absorbed into Judah. They just, in a sense, disappeared. Levi, because they stood up this day, who's on the Lord's side? Simeon could have been, but Levi came to Moses as we're on the Lord's side. So what ends up happening to them, they're going to become the servants of the priests, and the priests come from the tribe of Levi already. And then in Numbers chapter 35, verse 1 through 8, the Levites had pasture land and the cities among the tribes. Here's what Moses says in Numbers 35. Command the people of Israel, Moses says, to give to the Levites some of the inheritance of their possessions as cities for them to dwell in. So every tribe is going to portion out a couple of cities and the land around that city, and that would be called a Levitical city. And I've got a map, I think, somewhere on my website, I've handed it out before, of where the Levitical cities are located. We know where they're located, and every tribe's got a Levitical city, and that Levitical city is where the Levites live until they go serve in the temple or the tabernacle, and they'll come back there. They've got flocks, they've got fields, that's their home, and it becomes the teaching center because the Levites are the teachers, and so every tribe has, in a sense, several seminary cities throughout the land that the teachers live there in the land. So it's interesting how this whole thing progresses. They end up being cursed because they stepped up for the Lord. They're now given land. Well, I'll read the rest of it. Command the people of Israel to give to the Levites some of the inheritance of their possessions as cities for them to dwell in. And you shall give to the Levites pasture lands around the cities. The cities shall be theirs to dwell in, and their pasture lands shall be for their cattle and for their livestock and for their beasts. So the Levites end up getting not their own territory, but they're scattered throughout all, and they become the keepers of the tabernacle and of the Word of God. They become the teaching tribe. And so that is how that ends right there. Jacob, at first, not until his deathbed, does he condemn them for their immorality, their anger, their uncontrolled wrath. At first, he just condemns them because, now look what you did. Look at now you made my life difficult. But in the end, he calls them, and interestingly, according to the Word of God, because of their behavior here, their anger is cursed, and it affects the rest of the tribe's history and as the Bible comes together. Now, when we come back next week, we'll, of course, go to chapter 35, and that's an amazing story. Then God said to Jacob, go up to Bethel, where you promised would be. And then Jacob, it's in verse 2, Jacob said to his household and to all who were with him, get rid of the foreign gods you have with you and purify yourselves. So it's like, what? We've got to go meet Yahweh. I've told you that I met Yahweh at Bethel, and now I'm going to back and meet him after, 20-some years. But before we go meet my God, you've got to get rid of all these foreign gods. I mean, it's like what's that all about? And they bury him. We'll pick that up next week. I'll pray and we're finished. Father, we do thank you for the chance to look into these things. We thank you for your word. We ask that we would be faithful to you, that we would not make rash decisions, but we'd learn to think with reason, but we'd also learn to follow your spirit. We thank you for giving us grace of helping us overcome our own difficulties and our own failures, and providing us an opportunity to continue to serve you and walk in your wisdom. We do ask that we would be a light to this generation and help others find you and walk in your wisdom. Again, we thank you for the Word of God, we thank you for the Spirit, and we thank you for Jesus Christ and his work of salvation. And in his name we pray, amen. Thank you for being here.